Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it mean to be a teacher in today's world? And does our obsession with technology and technique cause us to undervalue the hearts and minds that the best teachers pour into their work? 30 years ago, the Dallas Institute for Humanities and Culture's Cowan Center for Education began hosting programs for educators designed to enrich their intellectual lives and generate fresh inspiration for teaching through a study of classic literature. On Saturday, February 9th, the Cowan Center alumni will come together to celebrate that tradition of humanities learning and the declaration of 2013 as the Year of the Teacher. Joining us as part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative for a discussion about teaching, learning, and the value of humanities to any community are three people who will take part in this weekend's festivities. Claudia Allams is director of the Dallas Institute of Humanities and Culture's Louise and Donald Cowan Center for Education. Dawson Orr is superintendent of Highland Park Independent School District. Jennifer Gunn is head of the English Language Arts Department at Rockwall Heath High School. Welcome, all of you, to Think.
Thank you.
So what sorts of conversations do you all hope will be sparked by the declaration of 2013 as the Year of the Teacher? Other than saying teachers are awesome, what beyond that do we need to be talking about?
To me, the Year of the Teacher is an opportunity to think about teachers first and foremost as human beings who are responsible for human beings. And we cultivate that. We have that sensibility in the Cowan Center's work at the Dallas Institute. I'm a recipient of that myself, having been through and been transformed by these programs that I get to oversee. And so our focus is not what a teacher does as much as what a teacher is, because we believe that if the teacher is properly fed and nourished, he or she will do the right things by his or her students.
What has happened? In some ways, we talk a lot about teachers and the value of their passion in the classroom. And yet, it seems like in many cases, in the interest of standardizing things and ensuring that everyone, every child is getting the same education, there are more and more limitations placed on autonomy within the classroom. What accounts for that, and how much latitude is there even working within the boundaries of, say, a public school system in North Texas?
Well, I think that teachers that really are passionate about what they're doing for the humans that are in their room are constantly navigating very fine lines. We're trying to meet those state standards. We're trying to do all of those sort of practical things in that very difficult endeavor to educate every citizen equally. But we're also remembering that we're dealing with individual human lives. And we, as a teacher, need to be reminded, and that's the beauty of the Cowan Center programs, that we too are humans, and the fundamental impulse of being a human is learning. And so we need to make sure that we don't constantly send the message to students that they're just a bottom line number, that they're more than that, that they are a human, and that we need to put them in touch with that impulse of learning that makes them human. So I think that's where we talk generically about the passion of teachers, but I think it's really about the passion for learning that we're getting at when we talk about that.
And Chris, if I may also,
sure.
I think in addition to passion, we need to recognize the importance of the knowledge that teachers bring, because in the system that we do have, where so much of curriculum has been prescribed in the form of state standards, and you know, one of the challenges in those systems is that most states have never met a curricular aim that they didn't embrace. And so for a teacher to have the knowledge coupled with wisdom and passion to really filter out and understand how things do connect and what is important as opposed to what is perhaps not as important. So good teaching is always an act of decision-making within that classroom that day, that moment. But I think with depth of knowledge, teachers really are able to navigate those waters for their students in meaningful ways.
Yes, and we speak about learning as the foundation for the teacher's passion, as Jennifer was saying. Jacques Barzin, recently deceased, but an incredible philosopher of education and cultural critic, talks about a teacher's passion for his or her subject yielding a spontaneous mental radiation that draws students to it. And this is what you have if you're working with people who are teachers who have been called to teach or who have realized, I'm actually good at teaching. I understand how to read faces. I understand how to sense people's sensibilities. And I want to be able to teach and instruct and guide them. And this cultivating this passion for learning in the teachers helps teachers to have that sense of their responsibility intellectually and their authority within the teaching profession, which makes all the difference in the world.
Well, there's two things I want to go back to here. First of all, Claudia, you said reading faces. We talk a lot about giving teachers the tools on paper to evaluate student performance. We want to make sure that they are sort of watching the way, say, a student works through a problem. And yet reading faces is, again, one of those human skills that seems to make perfect sense. And we all know if you're speaking to people and you're losing the room, there's a problem there, and yet it doesn't seem like something that we talk about a lot with regard to educators.
No, this was, and I'll yield to my colleagues also on this because we've just had a lovely conversation about this. This is one of the things that we believe in, is that teachers, whether you are called and born to it or whether you happen into it and realize, I know how to do this, teachers have a sensibility about people, and their concern is to look at the human beings around them. And when they are given the proper nurturing and intellectual stimulation themselves, it only makes them more excited and more passionate about wanting to reach these human beings in their charge, the ones who have been given to them for that time, for that period. And so a teacher, we say, does understand those reads, as we talk about it, does understand when a student's eyebrow raises, does understand a fidget in the seat. And if we cultivate the teacher's human sensibilities by giving them their life of their mind, by respecting them in their tradition, in the profession of teaching, we will also nurture those human desires in them to cultivate their own human sensibilities. So it ends up being, again, that spontaneous mental radiation that will turn the teacher into a better communicator and therefore make them more able to reach their students.
And I would just like to add that really good teaching is just really good conversation. And if you know how to interact with students on a very human, personal level and have conversation with them, and good conversation is going to be reading faces and picking up on those cues, then you're going to be great.
But I also think that teachers can translate what Claudia referred to as that fidget in the chair, that raised eyebrow. I think the great teacher can also recognize that, perhaps that written fidget on the part of a student, mm-hmm. that yes. Hesitancy. And so teachers do. I mean, obviously you start from knowledge and content and appreciating whatever body of knowledge you're about, but then understanding how the student interacts with it and understanding perhaps the misconceptions along the way, the hesitancies. When you really invite someone into something new that they know nothing about, some children embrace it, some are frightened by that. And
yes.
So I think that's all in the wisdom of a great teacher.
Well, that I'm glad you said wisdom again, because I picked up on that earlier. That is a word, it strikes me because it seems entirely outside of the conversation that we have about education today. We talk about facts and we talk about skills, but wisdom seems something that many people may believe that the schools ought to just give up on.
That's the part that we're not giving up on. As a matter of fact, that's the absolute part that we're trying to resuscitate, to revive. Inside the heart of a teacher is a learner. Now, we, of course, believe that inside of the heart of every human being is a learner. But there's a certain special kind of learner in the heart of a teacher, because a teacher's work, when given that sense of his or her professional authority, is to realize my work is with the life of the mind. Whether I teach four-year-olds or I teach graduate students in college, my primary responsibility is to help cultivate this young mind, and through it their emotions, through it their social sensibilities and all of these things. But my work is with the mind. And if we don't have something higher than simply being able to be acquisitive, to gain material things, to get a job, all of these important things in part of life, then if that's the end game, then we have not reached the fullness of the human condition. And so we talk about the end of learning being wisdom, not the end of learning being knowledge. but wisdom.
We are speaking this hour with Claudia Allams, who is director of the Dallas Institute of Humanities and Cultures Louise and Donald Cowan Center for Education. Dawson Orr is here as well. He's a superintendent of Highland Park Independent School District. And Jennifer Gunn is head of the English Language Arts Department at Rockwall Heath High School. They will all participate in the Cowan Center's 30th anniversary celebration this coming Saturday, February 9th. You can find information at dallasinstitute.org. We'll come back to this conversation in a couple of minutes, and we invite you to join us by calling in to 1-800-933-5372 or emailing think@kera.org. Before we come back to the conversation, we want to remind you that we have $79,000 left to raise to support the programming that you count on here on KERA. To the extent that KERA is part of your life of the mind, we do ask that you make a contribution in any amount right now at 1-888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. I'm joined now by Jeff Winnington, who is senior producer of Think, host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, Chris. And you know, there's some actually really exciting news today that maybe our listeners aren't aware of. The drive is going to end tonight at 7 p.m., no matter what. Hopefully we'll make this remaining $79,000 that needs to be raised by then so that we can make the goal for our drive. But the drive ends at 7 p.m. no matter what. If we reach the $79,000 remaining dollars before then, the drive ends right then. And that's why it's so important that you call right now, 888-694-6931, or do it online at kera.org, because we're giving away that trip to D.C. where you get to sit in on Morning Edition or All Things Considered, the Diane Rehm Show. Somebody's going to win that. We're also going to give away another iPad.
Nice.
And those drawings are going to happen when the drive ends. If it's 7 o'clock, it's 7 o'clock. If it's earlier, when we reach this remaining $79,000 raised, that's when the drawing's going to happen. That's when you will lose your opportunity to be included. And it's everybody who's given during this campaign. So don't miss this opportunity right now to get in on these great well, they're extra. It's a little extra
bonuses, yeah,
on top of the great radio you get every day on KERA.
1-888-694-6931 is the number, or you can go to kera.org. We always appreciate the wonderful support that we receive from those of you who make an appointment to listen to Think every day or several times a week. We really appreciate that. We have heard from hundreds of you thus far this drive, but we know that there are not just hundreds or dozens of you listening. If that were the case, we could just all meet up in the community room of KERA and not bother broadcasting the show. We know there are thousands of you out there who love the programming, who really feel loyal to KERA, but who have not yet translated that into a gift of financial support. As lifelong learners, and we know that's what you are here at KERA, we know, frankly, we know you spend a lot of money on books, you spend money on films, you spend money on museums and travel and education. We don't want you to cut any of that out. We just want you to consider that KERA is one of the sources of information in your life that maybe gives you ideas and information about the things that you want to further explore.
It's all there for you. We're just asking you to make your contribution. $76,000 left to go, Chris. This is ticking down really quickly. Thanks to everybody who's contributed. Again, the phone number is 888-694-6931 or click and join at kera.org. I want to thank Patricia Gabe in Fort Worth, Bertrand Hamilton in Frisco, Donna and Chris Rice in Louisville, Fred Theobald in Dallas, and a listener who says, KERA provides an untainted view of current events and my children enjoy the programming because it engages them in thought-provoking stories that provide them with material for their schoolwork.
Awesome. Wonderful. Well, thank all of you who have made contributions to KERA in this drive, in this year. We really do rely on you, and we would love to welcome you as a new member to the station. Give us a call now at 1-888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org. The bonus is, if you make your contribution today, we will be doing that drawing for an iPad at the end of the fundraising day. $76,000 left to go. Chip in a bit of that, and you will bring us that much closer to the end. Thank you so much.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. New spring semester personal enrichment and professional development courses are now open and available for registration. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. The Cowan Center has declared the year 2013 as the Year of the Teacher. And because of that, we are speaking this hour with Jennifer Gunn, who is head of the English Language Arts Department at Rockwall Heath High School, Dawson Orr, superintendent of Highland Park Independent School District, and Claudia Allams, director of the Dallas Institute of Humanities and Culture's Louise and Donald Cowan Center for Education. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So, Claudia, can you tell us a little bit about how the Cowan Center came into existence and how the experience that it provides has evolved over the past three decades?
When A Nation at Risk was published in 1983, the Dallas Institute had already spent a couple of years thinking about the public schools and how we needed to shore up the public school system. Gail Thomas began the first program in 1981 at the Dallas Institute, the recess is over, she called it. And so the Institute was already concerned about the state of the public schools and what we were to do as we moved into the next millennia. And when A Nation at Risk came, Dr. Louise Cowan, who was one of the founding fellows of the Dallas Institute, said, we need to build our teachers is what we need to do. And so she applied for a National Endowment for the Humanities summer seminar grant for high school English teachers. It was a two-summer course of classes. And she told me just a few years ago she never intended it to be anything but for high school English teachers because she didn't know anyone else would be crazy enough to read that much because it's an amazing amount of reading. But what the course is about is all about learning. It's not about methodology. It's not about pedagogy, which is typically what we teachers get in our professional development training. It's about renewing that passion, that love of learning that a teacher has in his or her heart that sometimes can really get just calloused over in the system itself, in education itself, because of the different values. Out of that summer seminar for school teachers came the Principals Institute in 1989. The school teachers told the Cowans, Drs. Donald and Louise Cowan, if my principals only could think like this, it would make my job so much easier if we were all thinking about this. And so they ran 3 years of Principals Institute programs doing the same thing, reading classic texts of literature, primarily philosophy, some history, talking about art and film, images that would evoke human sensibilities and human understanding. And when I came to work at the Dallas Institute 8 years ago, I started thinking that we needed to cultivate even a broader constituency. A few years ago, we began the Education Forum, which is a program based on getting citizens and educators alike to focus on a singular issue of importance. And then the Superintendent Symposium came about that next year. And what we found in all of these gradations of educators, from the teachers and the principals and the superintendents, is that everyone is hungry to remember why they got into the profession in the first place. And it has something to do, again, with being human. And that's what I discovered when I went as a participant in 1989 and 90. The program transformed me. It changed my life. I wouldn't say that if it were just a singular testimony. Almost two-thirds of the classes each summer of the summer seminar, the Summer Institute, we now call it, say that this has transformed me in my life, in my profession, and the way I think of myself in the world. And so it's a very powerful, mysterious experience of learning because you get all kinds of content that you may not have had if you didn't have a good liberal arts background. But you also walk away, actually practically speaking, with a very a serious canon of teaching skills because you've practiced very rigorous methods for 15 straight days, seminars and listening to lectures and watching films and journaling and all of these things. And as teachers, we just absorb these things and take them back to us. Jennifer also experienced the Summer Institute. As a matter of fact, she went through four of them because at that time we had two politics programs as well.
Yeah, I was just recounting to Dr. Orr and Dr. Alms on our way here that after being through the Summer Institute, just the first one, I really never had students asking me anymore, why are we learning this? There was something that I carried into the classroom that we all I knew from that experience how to learn communally. And I knew how to get all of us to focus on something higher than ourselves. And that's what the Cowan Center does for teachers. It reminds them of that higher thing.
It has to be interesting, Jennifer, I would imagine, especially on the level of teachers who may have just a bachelor's degree. That's what I have. But who may have just a bachelor's degree, who may have postgraduate education. In those small classes, there has to be a balance of people who have never really tackled this material before.
Correct.
And people who are revisiting it. Can you talk about how that dynamic actually works maybe to your advantage in a group setting?
Yeah. I was actually one of those students that had not had a great liberal arts background. I went in with a bachelor's degree, but I had not read all the philosophy and all of the classic literature that we were exposed to. And it was liberating to be sort of presented it with this undying devotion to you'll get it. And that was something that they taught me to take back into the classroom too, that you put this meaningful, absolutely astounding piece of literature that carries our whole civilization with it in front of someone and go, you're worth this.
Mm-hmm.
You can get this. And they will respond to that. They will absolutely get it. But it is amazing your question specifically, this balance, it's the communal aspect of it. It's that you're all reading the same thing. You're all studying it together. And through that sense of community, everybody is comfortable. And I think that that's a wonderful thing to take back to any classroom at any grade level.
It's almost a perfect learning experience in that way. And I hate to say that, but it does feel like that. Because what the faculty inculcated in us was, we are not here competing with one another. We will be better for one another's presence in this class, for one another's contribution. And the respect that is shown you and that we continue to show the profession is a constant astonishment to people when they walk in the door. And that's the thing that transformed me. The very first few minutes I walked in the door, the respect that I was shown because I had given my life to teaching. Mm-hmm. It changed my worldview because I had never been so valued before. And it taught me how to value my students in that way. And you can't give what you've never been given. And this is the thing that kind of supportive, encouraging, but unbelievably rigorous and demanding and challenging intellectual, emotional, communal experience, as you're saying, Jennifer, does, this is what it does for you. It equips the teacher.
I do feel like I need to tell the audience what the challenge is. This is a 3,000 pages of reading in 3 weeks endeavor. It's an intensive demand. And so when you do these 3 weeks, you do give your life to those 3 weeks.
Yes.
It's an investment. And, well worth it.
And I'll speak at a different level, but you can tell the passion that these two feel for it and the way it changed them. I've participated in 3 superintendent symposiums, and we can't give 3 weeks in the summer. So we come in an evening and a full day. But for instance, reading Prometheus Bound, as superintendents, we deal with the how on a constant basis, school finance, litigation, discipline, technical issues. But the underlying value debate that's gone on in this country for, I'm going to say, this century without a doubt, has been the whole issue of what John Gardner asked 50 years ago in Search of Excellence. Can we be equal and excellent too? And the issue of equity and excellence. And so Prometheus gives you an opportunity to think about how knowledge was given to man, and that was a very different paradigm than that only when the gods intervened did mankind advance. And so very few of us, the superintendents in that room, I don't think any of us were English majors or had really studied the classics, but we were able to delve into it. And the other thing that you find as adults is that you have a chance to see people's academic background. They might approach it from the standpoint of they were a science major. They may have been a mathematician. They may have been a history major. But it enriches that conversation. Everyone can contribute to it. And just the idea of reconnecting with the joy of learning is very powerful for people. And I think that's what we want to always do for teachers is to keep – we used to talk about the lamp of learning, keep the light of learning alive. Well, that's nourished by learning.
The interesting thing about a 30-year time frame for all of these programs is that if you look at our world 30 years ago, there was like TV in the evenings, and you know, it went off the air at 2 a.m. There weren't computers, certainly not online, and not the way we use them today. Do we have to fight harder today to find mental space and time for these endeavors?
I think that we do, and this is part of the necessity, the critical necessity of fostering the humanity in us is by allowing and giving teachers the permission to focus on thinking about their students as human, thinking of themselves as human, and not simply cogs in the machine, not simply part of the machinery, but using the technology to advance learning, not being used by it, and not being fooled into thinking that that avenue of just technology for everything is the way to learn everything, but being wise again, having the wisdom to know when to use the wonderful benefits that we have of technology. But it is a different age. We are dealing with a different kind of Promethean fire now. In that way.
And I think we do have to work harder to just eliminate some of the noise from the conversation. I mean, the connectivity is ubiquitous, and people seem to lead very busy lives. Even something about a six-year-old needing a electronic planner concerns me. But, but, you know, you just simply see that lives are so scheduled, so structured. Mm-hmm. I think we do have to work to kind of break into that and give the opportunity for reflection and learning.
We are speaking this hour with Dawson Orr, who is superintendent of the Highland Park Independent School District, Jennifer Gunn, head of the English Language Arts Department at Rockwall Heath High School, and Claudia Allams, director of the Dallas Institute of Humanities and Culture's Louise and Donald Cowan Center for Education, which is celebrating its 30th anniversary this Saturday, February 9th. You can find more information at dallasinstitute.org. We will continue this conversation, which is part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative, in a few minutes. If you'd like to join us, call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. In the meantime, we want to remind you that we have $72,000 left to go. We have raised $50,000 so far today. Thank you so much to every one of you who gave even a dollar to that. We know some of you gave significantly more than that. We greatly appreciate it. You can make your contribution now at 1-888-694-6931. Or you can go online at kera.org. Jeff Whittington is back here in studio with us. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. We're looking for more Monday membership campaign heroes like Max Lingamfelter in Fort Worth and Pauline Siebert in Richardson, Jim and Vicky Olvera in Dallas, and these other heroes, Rebecca and Danny Watson in Coppell. They're helping KERA meet this membership campaign goal. If you were keeping track, we started this out. We're looking for about, it was up $80,000 left to raise, just $71,000 left to go right now in the drive. We can end it in a matter of just a couple of hours. If you'll be the next one to call 888-694-6931 or contribute online at kera.org. And don't forget, everybody who contributes, and even if you don't contribute, you can get in the drawing, but we hope that you'll make a contribution. Everyone who makes a contribution is automatically entered to win a 16-gigabyte iPad and also this fantastic trip with airfare and hotel for two to Washington, D.C. What an opportunity. And you're also going to support
two separate drawings for this.
Yeah, there's two separate drawings. You don't get the iPad and the trip. You'll get...
Yeah, come on.
You might win the iPad and you might win the trip. Someone's going to win each of these. So you could be the one when you call 888-694-6931.
Your contribution to KERA is really an investment not only in your own ongoing lifelong education, but in your community. You know, making KERA available for the people who are not at this point in their lives in a position to give is a really wonderful thing to do. Just as we heard earlier that teachers are saying, if only my principal could learn this. And principals were saying, if only my superintendent could learn this. Maybe you're thinking, if only my neighbors could listen to KERA, if only, you know, other people in this community could. And they can, thanks to your contribution now at kera.org or 1-888-694-6931. Down to $70,000 left to go. You people are amazing, and we so appreciate that.
Yeah, about $50,000 so far raised today, about $70,000 left to go. 888-694-6931. You know what, Chris? The truth is that our listeners who give, their neighbors are listening to the station. We know that about 400,000 of you listen to KERA for at least a few minutes every week. And you know what? I'll bet you listen a whole lot more than a few minutes. We also know just because you, or at least your fellow listeners who have gone on and joined us, have told us that they listen for about 5 years before they finally gave. On average, you know, a person who contributes to public radio listens for about 5 years before they give. How long have you been listening? You understand the funding model. You've heard, if you've been listening for 5 years, you have heard like 15 membership campaigns. So you totally understand how this model works. And it's the last day of the drive. You can be a Monday membership drive hero by calling right now. Chris, we're down to 70,000 left to raise.
Very nice. Yeah, I would venture to say a lot of you who are still waiting to make your first contribution are actually rooting for us right now. You love KERA so much that you're so hoping that we raise the money that we need by the end of the day, and you are really hoping that goal happens. The one disconnect is that you have not yet made your contribution. We need to hear from you at 1-888-694-6931 or kera.org. You will feel terrific about your contribution.
I want to thank Bruce Levy, who says, I've been a member of public radio since I was a poor graduate student and had to eke out the $25 a year I pledged in 3 installments.
Hmm.
He says, I'm now a less poor but hardly wealthy college professor, and NPR daily enriches my life. He says, my one regret is that you've gone nearly 100% talk. There are some excellent syndicated NPR music shows, or used to be. He mentions a couple of different hosts. I would remind everybody that we do have a sister station down the hall and down the dial at 91.7 KXT, which is a music station. And you know what? It's the support of everybody in North Texas for the whole idea, the dream, really, of public radio that makes all the service you get from North Texas Public Broadcasting possible.
We are not supported by commercial dollars, and that's why we're able to respond to your needs. Those of you, enough of you said over the years, we want this information station, we want music. We're now able to give you both. Your dollars right now support the information portion of KERA, KERA 90.1. You can make a pledge in any amount at kera.org or 1-888-694-6931. When you do, you get in under the wire to be entered in the drawings that we have going for the trip to Washington, D.C. to visit Diane Rehm and the NPR headquarters, and you will also be entered into the drawing for the iPad. So give us a call, 888-694-6931.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. New spring semester personal enrichment and professional development courses are now open and available for registration. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We are talking this hour about the 30th anniversary of the Cowan Center for the Cowan Center for Education at the Dallas Institute of Humanities and Culture. Claudia Allams is director, and we are also speaking with Dawson Orr, superintendent of the Highland Park Independent School District, and Jennifer Gunn, head of the English Language Arts Department at Rockwall Heath High School. If you'd like to find information about the 30th anniversary celebration for the Cowan Center that's taking place this coming Saturday, February 9th, you can find that online at dallasinstitute.org. If you'd like to join us, call 1-800-933-5372. So one thing that strikes me about the discussions we've had and about the reading I've done about the programs is you mentioned, Claudia, there's no competition. And I wonder how learning is freed up when you're not necessarily there to be the best student in the class, but to be the best student you can be.
To me, that's the goal of all learning. As Don Cowan talks about it, and we were just reading a passage a little while ago, excellence doesn't have to be about competition, but true excellence is about joining the series of excellences where, like good, the more, the better. And so when you think about learning as benefiting not only yourself, but benefiting your community, benefiting the country, the world. When you think about learning as this act of generosity, like we think teaching is an act of generosity, then it reframes the way that you approach learning, and you can listen with humility if you happen to be intellectually brighter than the person sitting next to you. You can listen with eagerness if you happen to be sitting next to a person who is not just in your category. It's but you have to foster that in the classroom. The teachers have to model that. They have to foster that. And that's what learning about learning really does for teachers. And you do it by practicing it. You do it by literally doing it. You don't just do it by talking about it. You experience it. As Jennifer said, you dive into the 3,000 pages or the 1,700 pages the other summer, and you become a participant. And so it becomes a part of the fabric of your life.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak with Matt in Plano. Hi, Matt.
Hello.
Hi. Go right ahead, please.
Okay. Well, my big question or my statement is that teachers appear to be underpaid, overworked, and never valued. If you expect a lot from your teachers, you should be able to pay them that for the value of their services.
Well, I don't know that you'll get any arguments in this room, but can you all maybe address from the three different perspectives that you have, what teachers want, and I'm not for a moment saying that they don't deserve to be making, you know, NFL, Super Bowl level salaries, but what besides money do teachers wish that they could have?
Well, I will say that I think most teachers, it's not about money at all. It's like yes, we would like to make a livable wage. We like to eat, but it's the value part that Matt addressed there. The hard part of our job is when we don't feel valued. Again, this brings me back to the Cowan Center. That's the beauty of having a place that is devoted to reminding you of what your value is, which is the value of the students that sit in your room.
And so sometimes you have to do that for yourself if you're not getting
Correct.
It externally.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think certainly teachers are motivated by money to the extent that it allows them to provide for themselves and their family and meet other goals. That's a given. But you know, in terms of I think what feeds people's souls is it's the meaningful relationship with students. I think adults in general do want some sense of autonomy. Now, it may be autonomy within a framework, and it should be within a framework. But the idea that you have the opportunity to make meaningful decisions, that you have the opportunity to grow and learn. And then, you know, teaching, my father was an educator. He's the first one that told me is that, you know, teachers have the greatest appreciation for delayed gratification of any profession.
Sometimes they may never hear how things turn out.
It is an act of faith.
Yeah.
It is an absolute act of faith that the work you've done will translate into something better for the future. So I think to the extent that teachers can, in their daily interactions with students and periodically have a chance to assess that impact and realize that they are making a difference. A sense of personal and professional efficacy is inherent in being a good teacher.
I wonder for you, Dawson, and the other superintendents mm-hmm. who've been through the program, if there's even an added value, because for someone in Jennifer's position, even if they haven't done this, occasionally they see that glimmer. They mm-hmm. see the light bulb go on over someone's mm-hmm. head. And when you're at the level of superintendent, you have a great deal of responsibility, a very important job, this huge budget, and yet also a lot of bureaucracy to deal with, and you've got the board, and maybe not as many sort of aha moments to fill your soul.
Oh, well, yeah, we're definitely vicarious participants in this, but it is, you know, the superintendents I know that you know, they work to try to find that opportunity to get into a classroom, to step into campuses, to reconnect. And I've never had a bad day in a kindergarten classroom. You know? So you do work to try to connect to it. But yes, that opportunity to come together with colleagues is important because we are frequently forced to be removed from the heart of what it is that we do.
Let's go back to the phones now. 1-800-933-5372. Kathleen is on the line in Richardson. Hey, Kathleen.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to comment about how do we as teachers or superintendents or principals or whatever get the parents more involved in the classroom with their students, getting them to have their students prepared for school. And by that I mean getting the children enthusiastic about learning, sure, they go to school and the parents tell them, have fun, make friends, and never mention after school, what did you do? Implying that you learned something. You don't want to ask a kid, what did they learn, because they never remember what they learned. But if you ask them what they did during school, make it important for them. We need to do that more. I never hear, on all these discussions, nobody ever mentions what role the parents should play.
Well, I'll start and others will join in. The role that you are suggesting parents need to play is critical, and from several things. One, it sends the very clear message to the student that this matters and it's important. From a more perhaps personally selfish perspective, parents should do that because actually it extends the learning and reinforces the learning. When a student is able to reflect back on what they did, it creates a wonderful opportunity for further discussion, and it really enhances the parent's role as the first teacher of their child. So self-interest, you should do it. I think it also speaks to the importance of a community, though, fostering the opportunity for adults to engage in learning and to stay in touch with the joy inherent in learning, and it's easier to then reach out to your child with that same excitement.
That's what I was about to say, Dawson, that I think perhaps the thing that could cultivate the student's interest in learning is for mom and dad to say, guess what I learned today? Hmm. Guess what I found out today? Guess what I read about today? We have a sensibility in our culture, by and large, that you've finished your education, you've finished your formal learning when you've graduated college. And much of the rest of the time we spend accumulating information about things in which we're interested already or gaining more information, but learning in the way that we talk about it, in the way that Donald Cowan talked about it, whose end result is transformation. Learning does not occur unless you are changed after you've learned that thing. Learning in that way, it cannot help but excite children. It cannot. I've seen it thousands of times myself as a teacher of students and as a teacher of teachers and even principals and superintendents, seeing this excitement that comes from, I'm learning this too. So that would be my suggestion. I know that there are, I don't mean to oversimplify this, but if our parents were learning, their children would understand the importance of that as well. So I would encourage parents to say, this is what I learned today.
What do you know about the ongoing sort of self-directed education that graduates of Cowan Center programs engage in?
To me, and because I am an alum of the Cowan Center, I see most often that the experience was transformative. You don't have to have "so" in front of that. That's what it means. It transforms you. I often talk about it in light of the parable, if you give a man a fish, then he eats for a day. If you teach him how to fish, he eats for a lifetime. And that's the kind of learning that we get in the Cowan Center programs with those rigorous, intensive programs, especially for the teachers. It teaches you how to learn, and it reminds you that your chief joy is learning. And that's the best thing you can do for your students, is to take passion and delight and wonder and bewilderment into the classroom. And they will follow you in that endeavor. And so if you can learn how to learn, you have something that goes with you your whole life.
Claudia Allams is director of the Dallas Institute of Humanities and Culture's Louise and Donald Cowan Center for Education. Dawson Orr is superintendent of Highland Park Independent School District. Jennifer Gunn is head of English Language Arts at Rockwall Heath High School. All three will take place in the Cowan Center's 30th anniversary celebration this Saturday. You can find information at dallasinstitute.org. Thank you so much to all three of you for being here. Really appreciate that.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Today's conversation was part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative. We appreciate you listening. We especially appreciate those of you who have also during this hour been making contributions of support to the station. 1-888-694-6931 is our telephone number. You can also make your contribution online at kera.org. When you do so, you will be entered into a drawing, two separate drawings we have, one for an iPad and one for this really amazing NPR experience in Washington, D.C. Jeff Whittington is back with us now. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. Yeah, the winner of KERA's trip to D.C. sweepstakes will take a four-day, three-night trip to our nation's capital. You'll be able to visit the Smithsonian and all the other great museums in the city, but you'll also be able to do something that few others have done. You'll be able to tour the new NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C. and watch a broadcast of either Morning Edition or All Things Considered. And you'll also be invited to sit in on a broadcast of the Diane Rehm Show at radio station WAMU over at American University. What an incredible opportunity. Make your contribution right now at 888-694-6931, and you will not only be entered to win this, you'll also be entered to win this iPad that we're going to give away at the end of the drive this evening as well. So do your part right now. You can also join at kera.org.
We would absolutely appreciate a contribution at the Friends level today as well. You can make yours at 888-694-6931 or kera.org. The Friends level is $1,500 a year or more, which can be broken out into monthly contributions of $125. When you do it, you will be really supporting a community organization that is operated and run by people who live here in North Texas with you and among you, and it operates really according to the needs that we have in this broadcast market. If you'd like to tell us why you are making your Monday superhero contribution, you can do that on the comments page or to the person that you make your gift to over the phone. Daphne Alexander writes, unbiased, relevant news reporting is what KERA means to her. Thank you so much, Daphne. Lori says, KERA is nourishment for my mind and soul. Very nice.
We also heard from Michael Dixon, who says, my window to the world, my connection to thoughtful debate. So thanks, Michael. Thanks to also to Barbara Hudson in Dallas, Phyllis and Sheldon Levy in Fort Worth, Lee Anderson in Fort Worth, and Ben Hall in Fort Worth. These folks are Monday membership drive heroes, and we want to thank them. We'd love to thank you. Make your phone call to 888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org.
$69,000 left to go. Your contribution in any amount will join together with the other contributions from people who love and value the station, who really believe in a life of learning, and understand that you know, that the money that is invested by you in KERA comes back to you a thousandfold in terms of news and information and various perspectives on this world that we all share. Thank you so much to Linda Steinberg for her contribution and also for her comments. Great news always and such interesting interviews. I only listen to KERA.
Don't forget that we are still offering the Downton Abbey DVD sets when you make a contribution. $10 a month, we'll thank you with your very own set of DVDs for season 3, the currently running season. A $20 a month contribution will send you all 3 seasons, everything they've made over at Downton Abbey, seasons 1, season 2, and season 3. And you can share that. You can watch it whenever you want. But that's a $20 a month contribution to KERA, and we'll thank you with all 3 seasons of Downton Abbey on DVD.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. And, of course, you can also take care of this online at kera.org, where you can sign up for the drawings we have going. Also, you can check out thank you gifts. If there is something that we have mentioned in days past that you were hoping we would mention again, it's probably still available. We're just not talking about it at the moment. So look online, and according to your membership contribution level, you can choose your own thank you gift.
It is the 9th on-air day of the drive, and we really want to be back covering the news at full time tomorrow with a full complement of programming. We know you do too. So to urge you to make your contribution today, we're going to give away one last iPad. Chris, this is a 16 gigabyte iPad with the 9.7-inch Retina display and the 5-megapixel EyeSight camera. Everyone who contributes by 7 p.m. tonight will be entered into our drawing, or by the end of the drive. If we reach the $68,000, just $68,000 that's left to raise before 7 p.m., the drive can conclude at that point as well. So make your call right now to 888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org. Let's end this drive successfully. Let's do it today.
1-888-694-6931. This is a place where you not, it's not simply a matter of saying thank you to KERA for the content, but it's a matter of ensuring the content that you love for another year. We take the money that you send us, we put it right to work for you, paying for the program, programs that you listen to, paying for staff salaries, keeping, you know, the transmitter on and broadcasting, keeping our equipment up to date, really putting our reporters out there with the equipment they need to gather local news and information, all because we know this is information that you want and because we answer to you and not to commercial sponsors. The whole point of public radio is that we are able to respond to people who want solid information, who want non-celebrity-based coverage of things. We know that there is a hunger for this, an appetite for this. We know that you have that appetite. Your dollars make it possible.
888-694-6931. Online at kera.org. Please do your part right now. We've got NPR News headlines coming up, but you can still call 888-694-6931. And thanks.